Lepton Audio presents Red Deception by Gary Grossman and Ed Fuller. Performed by PJ Oakland. Dan Reilly was in complete crisis mode now. There was no time for calm. He used all the authority in his voice and body language to get people through the chaos. The sounds, the smells, and the sight took him back to other locales, other attacks. All too recently, a terrorist attack in Tokyo, and years before that, Afghanistan. Now, as president of Kensington Royal Hotel's International Division, and the force behind the creation of the company's global threat assessment program known as Red Hotel, Reilly relied on instinct. He was, after all, Army-trained and State Department-tempered. Experience drove the dark-haired, 6-foot, 180-pound corporate executive in this new moment of crisis. "Faster!" he yelled. They only had seconds before the gasoline explosion that would undoubtedly trigger others. He guided people past ringing cell phones that would never be answered, past body parts, past debris, past death. "Keep going! Don't look back! Faster!" The group had swelled. Now everyone was running for their lives. And then it came. The boom and the heat flash at the same time. Reilly and the servicemen and women carried those who couldn't walk. 50 feet more. 40, he said to himself. A few more steps. Once on solid ground, Reilly, like the others, collapsed and took in the scene. Billowing gaseous smoke, one car after another engulfed in flames, loud popping and louder explosions. And approaching overhead, Coast Guard rescue helicopters, while fireboats headed midstream from the southern shore. Dan Reilly had done enough. Others would do better. He rose and began walking away, but spotted the corporal who had administered to the woman. The young enlisted man shook his head in sorrow.
"She didn't make it," he said, "but a lot of other people did."
Reilly simply nodded and patted the soldier on the back. He walked toward the line of oncoming emergency vehicles, military and civilian, their sirens screaming. He wasn't sure how he'd get anywhere, or for that matter, where he should go. But he had a friend to call in cases like this, a friend who would surely be into what the hell just happened. He was surprised when he got a clear cell line out. He figured they'd either be clogged, or Homeland Security would have had the towers silenced. Crisis protocol usually dictated that cellular communication be cut to prevent potential wireless signals from triggering explosive devices. But for now, they were on.
How much time had actually gone by? Reilly wondered.
It felt like an hour since the blasts. Reilly looked at his watch, and for the first time saw that his arm was bloody, and that it had been just 7 minutes since he last checked his watch in the cab.
"Hello, Bob, it's Reilly. Can't talk now, buddy, busy," came the reply. "Suppose you heard."
"Heard?" Reilly helped a woman who had fallen. "I'm there." Bob Heath gasped.
"There? 14th Street Bridge there?"
"Yes, awful." For the next minute, Reilly described the scene, minimizing his own efforts.
"Jesus Christ, are you okay?"
his friend asked.
"Yeah."
He looked at his hands. The blood was not his. He felt his head, touched his chest. No injuries. His gray-green suit was a mess. His shoes were covered in soot. But he was fine.
"This was well executed," Reilly noted.
"Timed with the others," Heath replied.
"What others?"
"You don't know? Minutes apart, attacks in New York and St. Louis, each at major transportation choke points."
Bob explained more. Reilly took a deep breath. He thought long and hard. The 14th Street Bridge across the Potomac, the Lincoln Tunnel, the I-70 interstate span across the Mississippi at St. Louis. Targets all too familiar to him.
"But there's more."
Reilly snapped back into the conversation.
Where? Not here. Latvia. The Russians are at the border. Looks real this time.
The man had reason to know. Bob Heath worked for the Central Intelligence Agency.